Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and we're back with another episode here. Lots of things going on, still continuing to discuss a lot of topics that we've been visiting in recent weeks, and we're going to keep coming back to some of these topics because they are some of the hot topics out there right now, and it seems like people want to hear more about them, and we're going to continue to touch on that. Before we get into the rest of the show, though, it wouldn't be a Disaster Podcast episode without my good friend Sam Bradley. And Sam, we didn't have you on last week talking about Ebola, but I think we're going to at least touch on it a little bit in this episode to kind of see what your thoughts are. How you doing?
I'm good, Jamie. Yeah, I was having a little disaster of my own last week, but I really was sad because I missed that. But actually, I would like to hear a little bit more. And we also did not have our good friend Jim Logan, who's with us tonight, so I'm very happy about that. I want to warn you a little bit, though. It is, like, really ripping windy. So if you hear some banging around, that's probably my doors and my windows. I'm not banging my head against the wall. So just be forewarned. So, Jim, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Fantastic, Jim, and it's great to have you back. We had Lieutenant Jim Strickland from Memphis Fire Department on last week, and he represented well, talking about some of the things, infection control, as the infection control officer, talking about Ebola. And before we get into the meat of the rest of this episode, I just wanted to kind of find out your thoughts, because I know you were on the call with the federal government, and the president was on and talking about preparedness and what the nation is doing to pull together. We had our Ebola episode on last week, but there are still more things to discuss, and this is a huge world health problem, but it seems like the United States is still kind of wrapped up in it.
Yeah, you know, it's we're the guardians for everybody, aren't we? So yeah, I was on a call with the White House staffer, CDC, and President Obama, and basically it was just an informational type meeting with their three-point plan. The first point was, we all wonder why they were sending troops to Africa for the Ebola, and it's to help manage it, to help contain it at the source. I know there's a lot of talk out there about, closing the borders, air traffic, and things like that. So that's still up in the air, and by the time this airs, it'll probably still be an issue. I think that the CDC, everything is starting to settle down now as we record this. There's a lot of paper flying back and forth with health departments and state and local officials and EMS services, and there's no known cure for this. We were talking before we jumped on the podcast, and for the three of us that are on the phone right now, we experienced some of this back in the 80s. We started learning more about HIV and AIDS and body systems isolation and standard universal precautions. When we used to go to work back in the day, the more blood and body fluids you had on your scrubs or your uniform, it was a badge of honor. Today, that's not the case, thank goodness, and we've learned from that. We got through the AIDS epidemic. We had lessons learned from that. I think we can take those same lessons because most all guidelines and protocols when it deals with body fluids are based on universal precautions, and that's we just need to adhere to those, and I think we'll be okay. And of course, the media, sensationalize a lot of this stuff. Not to diminish what Ebola is. It is a very dangerous, a very deadly disease, but we deal with very deadly and dangerous situations every day. A lot of common sense goes a long way. Universal precautions with the proper questioning of your patients that present with any of these signs and symptoms would be appropriate. And as far as travel, CDC guidelines, I love social media. You guys brought me into that little world, or big world now, right? But what you do not need to do is manage your news information through social media. If you can find Facebook, Twitter, and all those other social media outlets, you can certainly find the CDC. You can certainly find your local health state health department. That would encourage you to seek that out and not find your information. Not because there's a lot of misinformation out there. So that's true.
And frankly, you know what, Jim, when I go on Facebook, to me, I want to relax. I want to interact with friends. I want to talk about something other than what I'm getting hit with every which way on the news and stuff that's out there in the real world and affecting EMS. I don't want to have everybody downloading stuff on Ebola that I may know is not even accurate, like you said. So, God, give us a break on that. It's a course of concern. But, you know, you make a good point, too, because we did survive AIDS. And we survived AIDS going into it without having a clue what we were doing. We didn't have universal precautions. And I, you know, you were right. I was back there right in the middle of it. But I remember the sign of a good trauma is how much blood you got on you. You know, and you guys may snicker a little bit because you know what I'm talking about. You know, if you had it up to your armpits, man, that was a great call. And then we hear there's this disease that has a 14-year incubation period. It's like, what? And then the first gloves that we had, you couldn't feel through the darn thing. It was like wearing kitchen gloves. Like, seriously, right. We're going to have to try and work with these things on. So all things considered, I think we're much more prepared for this. I think the country's prepared for it. I think, you know, both of the counties I work for, almost literally the day that man was diagnosed in Dallas, the CDC recommendations came out. These people, both EMS agencies, were sending out information to their providers. I mean, they were on top of it. So I'm feeling pretty good about the preparation side of this for EMS, and I assume you have that as well.
I think from what I'm seeing from, you know, colleagues from across the country, like you guys and other folks in EMS and healthcare, I think we're pushing a lot of paper from the CDC out to our providers, and I think that, you know, we do education with Paragon, but you know you do education and training within your own organizations, and a lot of drills. You know, we do a lot of drills with the health department as far as, you know, point of dispensing for medications and things like that. Yeah. I think it's a good time, even though we only have one patient in the United States with this disease. It is a fatal disease, and there is a chance that we can experience more patients as we go forward. So I think it's just as important to, you know, this is the kind of stuff, it's like disaster medicine. It's not stuff you do every day, so you're not as prepared as you would be for your quote-unquote routine call, your seizure, your heart attack, those kind of things that we come in contact with daily. So it's not a bad idea, and I'm kind of pushing this effort here, is that we move from, you know, the administrative part of it to set policy to that specifically addresses Ebola, which, you know, bloodborne pathogens, it's all the same, but if you put that Ebola spin to it and that focus is good. But I think we need to, now that we have a kind of a lull, it seems like, as we record this, that it wouldn't be a bad idea for services and agencies to step out of their silos, get with their hospitals, health departments, police departments, sheriff's departments, EMS services, and do a little education on the proper donning and doffing of PPE for bloodborne pathogens, airborne, you know, particulates, those kind of things. Do your fit testing, make sure you're up to date on that, so you can be ready for some other things that are out there, because Ebola is not the only disease we need to be concerned with. It is a concerning situation that we're in, but that there's others that will follow.
And you know what, I like your point, Jim, too, about, you know, interacting with each other. We shouldn't be in a silo. We're all in this. This is a big worldwide event. And just today, it just kind of reminded me, one of my captains said, okay, well, what are we going to do internally within the fire department? We need to create some operational protocols for this, this, and this. So he was going to do a little bit of research on it. And he said, well, what is the ambulance company doing? And I said, well, why don't we ask them? So I arranged for person A to talk to person B, and I thought, you know, that actually makes good sense, and it's good for the interrelationship between the agencies anyway, because the fire departments all talk to each other, but we need to be talking to the other providers, because if there's an event, you know, we shouldn't have drastically different protocols on how we're going to handle isolation of those various things. So it makes a lot of sense for all of us to start talking to each other and the county and all of the people that will be involved in this thing, you know, handling the big picture. What do you think, Jamie?
I think that that's right on, right spot on, Sam and Jim, is the communication and getting out of our silos and talking to each of the public health stakeholders in our communities, from the hospitals to the EMS agencies to the public health departments, and bringing everybody together with the CDC guidelines. And Jim, like you said, don't go to social media for the information on this. If you want to be on social media talking about Ebola, spread the word that people should get their information from CDC.gov. There's Ebola updates on there every single day, sometimes every single hour as information comes in, they're updating it. The best possible information can be found there. The most current information can be found there, not the news. The news is getting their information from that page. So you can find it out just as quickly as they can by going there directly and getting the straight information. And I think that that's just the best possible thing piece of advice I've been able to give to everybody is don't buy into the hype. Get the information straight from the CDC. They know what they're doing. They know what they're talking about. Maybe they didn't react as fast as they could have reacted or done everything perfectly, but nobody does everything perfectly. But they have the information and they have the knowledge to deal with this. So trust them and find the information you need there.
Absolutely. And for those of our people listening, and many of them are EMS providers of one sort or another, if you're not yet aware, there are guidelines specifically for you. And nobody, like Jamie said, nobody knows it better than CDC, and they will continue to update the information as they gain more information. And that's going to be an ongoing process. So if someone else didn't lead you there, I will, and Jamie will, and Jim will. Go to the CDC website, and you can find specific information for pre-hospital care providers, and it doesn't get better than that.
So we've touched on Ebola. Let's move forward to our primary topic tonight, because I'm excited about it. And this is another topic that was pretty hot in the news before Ebola started taking over everything. And I think it still bears importance in and of itself, because these types of incidents, these hostile intruder incidents, these terrorism incidents and things like that that go on out there are still a danger and a risk for our communities. And disaster response, it is a type of disaster response in and of itself. And Sam, you were going to, I think our topic tonight is going to be talking a little bit about the Urban Shield program that you had in your system. And I think I'll let you kind of lead off and start us off on this discussion.
Okay. And we've talked a lot about different types from active shooter, and that's kind of become a more broadened event, as is your multiple casualty incidents, your multiple stabbings, I mean, all of it in a nutshell. So it's not just active shooter anymore. But I'm going to give a little overview of what we do out here in California, and then Jim can speak to how they handle it at Paragon, because we talked about the events. Now let's talk about what we do about them. How do we train our providers to handle these things? And I think this has been really good in a number of respects, because just like we were just saying about Ebola, you're bringing agencies together. And cops and firefighters didn't always play nice, and we know that. But I think this is a situation where we see this is a threat to all of us. And we all have a role. The cops need to stop the killing, and the EMS needs to stop the bleeding. And that could be a cop. And that's kind of the whole focus of what we do. Ironically, we started Urban Shield out here with the Alameda County Sheriff's Department in 2007, before all of that was as big an issue as it is now. But it did really focus on SWAT initially, and a lot of it still is SWAT-level training. But then as the years went by, they realized, well, hey, there are a lot of other players in this. Let's get fire involved. Let's get EMS involved. Let's get the bomb squads involved. I mean, I can't even begin to tell you how many different elements of law enforcement and fire and EMS are now engaged in this thing. And it's good, because as it builds, we're integrating with more of those folks. And it's clear that active shooter events are up. We had the Boston bombing, and the really, not to say there's any cool, something cool that happened out of that. That sounds very strange to say that, but there is something cool that happened about that, because Boston was the first out-of-state team that, engaged with Urban Shield, and they did in the very beginning. And they eventually went back and started their own back in Massachusetts. But in that interim, there was the Boston bombing, and it went very well. And I don't know who else saw this, but we have a big banquet at the end of the event for all the volunteers that took part, of which there are hundreds. And there was a clip from one of these people that ran the Boston event and said, this went really well because we learned what we learned at Urban Shield. And just about everybody in the room went crazy, because this was the first real evidence that what we do matters, and it was proven in that venue. And there's a couple other things that this does. We use the Bay Area UWASI really helps us financially with this. And what it does is it also looks at region response capabilities, because of all of the other agencies that we have getting involved in this.
Sam, before you get any farther, can you explain what UWASI is?
Oh, you're going to make me say that, aren't you, Jim?
Oh, so there's the acronyms again, yeah.
Yeah, just going to make sure everybody knows what you're talking about.
You're going to have to remember what the initials mean. You put me on the
spot. So UWASI is the Urban Area Security Initiative.
Thank you. God, I knew Jim would save me. Thank you. And they're a great group. They provide a lot of funding for exactly this kind of thing, and they really look more regionally than locally at response capabilities, and this is a great way, again, of pulling all these people together to do that. And it's even gone international. This has gotten really interesting, because we've had teams come in from all over the world. And I got to tell you, when the Israelis got here, there was nobody in the world that could do this better than they did, because obviously they're very practiced at us. But, you know, it's great for our local responders to really learn what they're doing internationally when these folks come out. And it is a competition. And mostly, like I said, mostly it's cops. The other one, fire not so much, EMS not so much. It's more of a learning venue for them. But the police activity, the SWAT teams actually are competing with each other. And I think they've learned a lot from each other along the way. So again, we're expanding regional collaboration. We're testing our regional integrated systems. It is really evaluating our existing level of preparedness and capability. And the EMS piece came along a few years ago. Our local Alameda County EMS agency was and is still very integral in making that part happen. And the cool thing is, this is an event, and this is something Jim can speak to, because I know that's what you do at Paragon. It's allowing EMS people to get into situations they may never otherwise get into or couldn't possibly anticipate getting into. And that's being, you know, integrated with the SWAT team who is out there handling a terrorist incident. It's an all-risk kind of thing. We have confined space. We have trench rescues. We have high and low angle. My fire department brings the boat out. They have people rappelling off the bridges. They use the ferry boats. They've had like hostage situations on the ferries. This thing is like a multi-county venue where the teams go from one venue to another around a couple different counties. And Jim, they even have a USAR element in this. So they get, you know, entrapped people out to that next level. I mean, and every year it gets a little better and it expands a little bit more. And all the different ICS elements are involved in this thing. So obviously this is a lot larger than I can, you know, possibly break down into its component parts. But like I said, the EMS branch is growing every year. I can't even tell you. I think we had 30 teams come through. Now, some of them are actual TEMS-type teams where they're tactical emergency medicine trained, and they come with their, you know, full regalia of stuff. And I was lucky enough to actually draw two of them for my evaluation rounds. And then you have folks that just come that, I remember we had a couple nurses from Northern California that never had done anything like this, and they just got inspired to come down and do it. And that was interesting because they don't know a lot about start triage and that kind of thing. But they learned. And they were thrown into a team with firefighters and other EMS providers, and they create a team. So there's also that element of, okay, we're here as a team. How are we going to do this? We need to find a leader. We need to figure out what our common ground is, and then we need to run with it. So I think it really gives an opportunity to practice leadership skills as well. So that was kind of the basis of it.
Yeah, it sounds super interesting, and I'm curious, Jim, what your thoughts are. Because that type of training where we integrate people from different backgrounds together and then give them some basic experiential training and then put them into a situation and scenario, it sounds very similar to what you guys have been doing at Paragon. And what's been your experience when you do that with small groups that haven't previously worked together?
Well, just to tag off of what Urban Shield is a critical training, kind of a tactical approach to search and rescue, all this other stuff that you mentioned was tied closely into UOC, Urban Area Security Initiative, which is a grant program that is awarded to it's based on scoring as far as vulnerability for terrorism and large events that's given to certain areas in the United States. It's a very competitive process, and it affords those areas that receive that grant award equipment and training in prevention and preparedness from terrorist events and natural disasters. It's all hazard. It's moved from terrorist to all hazards events. So, but for us, part of that training has been it's been kind of narrowed down. One of the elements of UIC is something called the Metropolitan Medical Response System, and that is it's something that's actually gone away in this, as far as funding goes in the last year. This is the last year of it. And it brings those people together to be able to get out of silos and the health department working with EMS working with fire and law and emergency management officials. And so it all was a springboard off of 9/11, quite frankly, to do this. What, as far as tactical, we were talking about hostile mass casualty incidents, not in particular active shooting, but it can be a hostile situation with any kind of terrorism event and dealing with that. What we're finding is you have tactical medicine, and that's a cool thing to go take that training if you're a specialized team, and that's okay. That's a good thing to have, and we need that. What we also need at a very basic level, what we try to do with this Paragon, is it's not – generally, when you think about these hostile MCIs from Columbine to the most recent one we've had, these things are over within 12 minutes. The average time of these hostile MCIs are 12 minutes. It takes a tactical response an average of 30 to 45 minutes to mobilize. Now, if you have a long stand, that's perfect. That's exactly what you need. That type of hostage situation. But when you have a situation like this, it's a little different. You have, workplace violence, whatever it is. It's going to be the patrolman. It's going to be the closest EMS unit. It's going to be the closest first response fire unit that goes. And that's kind of what we it's what we focus on. And those first responders are going to be that need to know the start triage, the quick hemorrhage control, just the basic concepts of trauma care and how to go about that. And it's a little bit different than triage, so that's another show in itself. It's far it's more of a sift and sort type approach to it, and that's kind of what we teach is sift and sort. You do triage on the back end once you get everybody seen and pulled out of the building, then you begin your start triage or yourself, whatever your organization uses. But it's a different way of handling an MCI and methodically going through and helping the most quickly.
So, you know, that's a good point about triage too, Jim, because we do it differently also. So a thought just struck me while you were talking, as well as training people that maybe haven't been part of that type of thing or haven't anticipated it, it's also kind of retraining those EMS providers. That, and I think the theme of this podcast today is getting out of your silo. And in essence, it's also kind of getting out of your the training mode. What you learned in EMT and paramedic school is not going to be what you're going to use out here. It's a very different skill set, and you have to be flexible enough to realize it, because time is of the essence, and there's a whole different way. It's way too, we could spend a whole show just talking about that, but I think that brings up the point. A lot of it is retraining, and you have to come in with a flexible mind and saying, okay, I'm going to take everything I ever knew about triage or whatever else, or bleeding control, or you know, that kind of thing, and say, what's going to work best for this situation, and understand exactly that. Jamie, did you have a thought out there?
No, I just was glad to hear Jim's kind of take on it, and it just kind of revisits the other things we've talked about when we've talked about this topic, is that, you know, there are really two types of situations. There are those hostage situations that last for hours and hours and hours and require the tactical team that comes in and takes them 30 minutes or more to get there and get set up, and then there are those rapid fire incidents that are over in just a few minutes, and people have to respond quickly in order to save lives. And it seems to be two different types of situations. And does Urban Shield address both those types of situations?
We do. Actually, you know, to be honest, the scenarios themselves are very much more like what Jim was talking about there. But we cut to the chase on them. It assumes that some other things have been handled by the time the SWAT gets there, because they are SWAT. So these are people that are engaged and called in after the fact. But another part of the training we're doing locally, not so much Urban Shield, but it's called Rescue Task Force. And rather than the two-week long or the very long, intense, tactical medical training, it's one day. It's 1 8-hour teaching firefighters how to fold into the safety net of the police. So there are different levels, but it is pretty much it's happening right now. You need to make split-second decisions, and you need to get in there and mitigate it. You don't have time to stand around and think about it. So, yeah, it's kind of an element of both.
Well, that's excellent. So when you put something like this together, what are the technical rescue expectations when you have like a USAR team that comes in and does something? What's the expectation for them to come in when you have that situation where you have to start going through a scenario and a scene that they have to do?
Well, this is what's interesting, because each of these is built out with that specific team in mind. So I would say taking a USAR scenario as an example, any objectives that Jim and Joe would have going on a USAR training would also be included in one of these specific Urban Shield scenarios that's really focused on the USAR element and engaging the USAR teams. Sizing up, controlling hazards, safety issues, dealing with infrastructure, how do you perform a search for trapped victims? How do you then turn over those victims to EMS? Who are your other resources? They're out there using all of their tools, as firefighters are. They're cutting, they're prying, they're lifting, extricating. Virtually everything a USAR would do in a real situation, they are going to exercise. And I got to tell you, it's just so impossible to explain to you how realistic these scenarios are. And they literally start building these the day after the last event is finished. And they are so realistic, and the people that get to portray the victims are so good at it. I mean, this isn't playtime. This is a real competitive, heavy-duty training incident. And like I said, that's the cool thing, because each of these is molded for a specific type of team. They have bomb rescue, bomb disposal teams, and so, of course, they have bombs going off. The SWATs get a mix of different things, but it's nice to see that, because where are you going to get this kind of training for all these different kind of teams? it's very expensive. It's very time consuming. It's very equipment intensive. So this is everything for everybody, and everybody gets a piece in it. But it also includes that integration with those other agencies, which is really hard to do if you're doing it on a small scale.
Well, I think that this is something we should probably continue talking about in another episode. We're really pushing the end of our time frame for one episode here. And I think, Sam, would you like to come back and talk about it in a second episode?
I always love talking about this. You don't have to switch my arm.
Excellent. Jim, you know, would like to have you back as well. But before we get to that, we just want to thank you and Paragon for making yourselves available and helping us bring this podcast to the community. I don't think people realize that it takes time and effort and funding and things like that to put together a good podcast and bring together the resources necessary to get it out to the community. And we couldn't do it without the assistance of Paragon Medical Education Group and the great training that you guys bring to the table for organizations. People should really check it out. Do you have the information on how people can get more information on where Paragon is and what you guys are up to?
Yeah, you can just find us on the web at paragonmedicalgroup.com. And from that, you can launch onto our Twitter and Facebook page. And that's about the best way I can tell you. You know, it's our pleasure to help sponsor this this podcast. And that's what it's about. It's about sharing information, about getting the message out there, and educating EMS and healthcare professionals. Fire and EMS in a different light. So something we like to say we're different than the two-dimensional textbooks. We bring these scenarios to life. It's not just a drill. It's an educational experience, and that's what we call it. It's the experience.
Well, we appreciate it, Jim, and thanks a lot for bringing your expertise to the show. Sam, where can folks find you?
All the usual social media places under Sam Bradley, Sam Bradley11 on Twitter. And I've got to tell you, I've experienced the experience. And I so enjoy watching the other people experience the experience. So, and remember, they're mobile. So if you ever want this kind of training that we've been talking about tonight, not to the level of Urban Shield, of course, it takes hundreds of people. But certainly Paragon can set something up for you, and they will bring it to you. Just thought I'd throw that out there. If people are more interested in Urban Shield, urbanshield.org is the main website for the event, and they post some videos up there from the year before, so you can get some idea of what those scenarios look like. But like I said, Sam Bradley, Sam Bradley11, and certainly on the disasterpodcast.com is where you could find me, and we would love to hear from you.
Yep, disasterpodcast.com is where you can find me as well, and of course under the handle PodMedic in most social media circles. And we want to thank you for getting involved here at the show. Leave comments over on the website. Leave comments under each episode. There's a place to leave comments. We want you to share those comments back with the community. Ask us questions. Give us ideas for future episodes. What did you like? What do you want more of? That's what's important. You know, this is a two-way street. We want to bring you what you want to hear more about. So continue to check out the Disaster Podcast, and we'll continue to bring you great topics like information about Urban Shield and some of the great training opportunities that are available out there from many different resources. That's it for me. Sam, Urban Shield and domestic terrorism and Ebola and everything else just tells us a lot about the way we handle disaster medicine.
It does, and what's scary, Jamie, is sometimes it's not us going out to the disaster, it's the disaster right in our midst and having to deal with it locally. And it's very clear that disaster medicine is not your everyday medicine.